Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world, all the syndicated stations and individuals listening. Some are listening over their telephones, hard lines, cell phones, cab drivers, bus drivers, people all over the country, truck drivers, get a lot of good feedback. And we care about the issues that are important to you. Health and nutrition's top of the list. But environmental issues are also of concern. We're going to address all that today. Then I'm going to share a open letter to Michael Moore about he's coming out with a new film. I wish him well with it. But I'm concerned that so many people on the corporate liberal left that he represents, the Clintons, Obamas, the corporate state in Washington, that they put all their energy into hating Trump. But none of it, I see, causing progressive policies to be put in their place. So why not put some of that energy into starting a new platform for progressive ideals, not the corporate ideals out of Washington that only benefit those in power? So I'll share that letter with you, and it'll be sent out also and posted today. And the program that I did yesterday, where I challenged Wikipedia, entitled Wikipedia Has Gone to the Dark Side, that is posted also. And what's important for that particular article is for you to share it, because this is beginning the process of opening people's minds that what they had thought was completely objective, open source encyclopedia, which is would be ideal if that was the case, but we found it's not. That so many people have been libeled and attacked, vilified, with no due process. To me, my personal view is that Wikipedia's health and nutrition and other areas are run by people who are more like a star chamber. And just imagine President Obama's National Defense Authorization Act, where you're arrested. You're not given any opportunity to defend yourself. You don't know who your attackers are. And you can have indefinite detention. That's what it means in a literal sense for myself and others who've been attacked on Wikipedia. I want you to read specifically. Please do, and share it. The letter that my attorneys wrote to Wikipedia showing that every single statement was wrong and giving them irrefutable proof of what was correct. Never did a thing. In fact, we just found out today that over 400 opportunities Wikipedia had to make changes in people's bios, not a single one was done. So, that should tell us a lot. But our next report coming out next Monday will tell you even more. So when we do documentaries, broadcasts, commentaries, please share them with people, because that's how word of mouth spreads. So we have a lot to share today, and also I'm going to set aside time to look at the issue of Guns and Butter and Bonnie Faulkner's program being thrown off the air and her entire 17-year archives with some outstanding original broadcasts purged. Was it legitimate? We'll explore that. But we always start with the latest on health and healing, and from Georgia Institute of Technology comes a study about dehydration. Because when dehydration strikes, part of the brain can swell and neural signaling can intensify, and doing just monotonous tasks get even harder. So with the help of brain scans and a simple repetitive task to test responsiveness, exercise physiologists at Georgia Institute of Technology studied the subjects and saw that you want to keep properly hydrated. That's important. Now, think of all the people now, and I just saw a lot of them on Sunday in the park training for the upcoming New York City Marathon. Think of all the people that go to the beach. They're dehydrating. And older people in particular, their brains can dehydrate, so they begin to lose a lot of the important tasks that their brain allows to do. So we have to make sure that each day we're drinking fresh juices, not colas, not energy drinks, but fresh juices. Apple juice, watermelon juice would be the top of my list with lemon in it. 16 ounces of watermelon juice, with 2 of those ounces being ginger and 2 being lemon. That's a great juice to rehydrate, give you electrolytes, and give you natural energy. But stay away from the colas, because they have caffeine, and caffeine actually dehydrates you. Now imagine how many people who take coffee in the morning or some other beverage like that, that has caffeine in the daytime. You're taking something that creates an acid condition in the body, and that is not good. That creates pain. That's why one of the first things I do when I'm working with people who have arthritis or any form of body pain is get them onto an alkaline state and away from acidity. So when you have coffee in the morning, you're flushing out a lot of vitamins. Zinc, calcium, magnesium, potassium can go out of the body. So when people say, I take my vitamins every morning, why do I have osteoporosis, thinning of the bones? Do you take it with caffeine? Yeah. Bad. Can't do that. All right? So we want to make sure that we get plenty of good quality, healthy water in our system each day. Now, you don't want too much, but you don't want too little. Because also, too little water and you're dehydrated, the blood thickens. That's dangerous. And that can put you at risk of having a stroke. You want the blood nicely thinned. And a green juice is the great way to thin your blood and help prevent strokes and rehydrate. And also, another study from the University of Michigan about healthy diets are linked to healthy cellular aging in women. What this means is this. Eating a diet that is rich in fruits and vegetables and whole grains and legumes and nuts and seeds and tubers and low in sugar and sodium and processed meats could help promote healthy cell aging in women. And this was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. In fact, they say, quote, the key takeaway is that following a healthy diet can help us maintain healthy cells and avoid certain chronic diseases, end quote. And that was the professor of nutrition sciences, University of Michigan School of Public Health. So what we now know is this, that we have these end cells of our chromosomes. They're called telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S. They're DNA protein structures. Now, I've mentioned many times that the telomeres kind of remind you of the end plastic caps on your shoestrings to keep your shoelaces from unraveling. They do the same thing on a cell. They create stability, and they protect your DNA. When you drink alcohol, you destroy the telomeres, you shorten them, you die quicker. That's why so many people who seemingly are healthy but who drank heavily in college or high school or out of college, they're going to die quicker. They're going to have more diseases, heart disease, cancers, and at a much higher level. Why? Because the telomere length shortens during each of these cell cycles, and a bad diet, the standard American diet, shortens your telomeres and has you die quicker. So they checked 5,000 adults on this, and they found that those who had a healthy diet, like the Mediterranean diet, a healthy, you know, a diet that's, that would be like a vegan diet that you hear all the time. And this was reported also at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. Women lived longer. Their telomeres are longer. So listen carefully. The longer your telomeres, the longer your life. The shorter your telomeres, the shorter your life. And each organ has telomeres. So your brain might have more shorter telomeres than your heart. But when you're drinking, across the board, you're shortening your telomeres. Also, preliminary study finds pomegranate juice can lower fetal brain damage risk. This is from the Ramban Hospital and Israel Institute of Technology. Now, pomegranates are, especially for the upcoming Jewish New Year, Shana, they found that the pomegranates are great at reducing premature birth and brain damage to fetuses. So pregnant women, please take pomegranates. You can eat them. You can take the juice. You can take the concentrate. But it's good for that turning off inflammation. It's good for your immune system. It's good for stopping infection. And it's good for helping the brains of the developing fetus. And this was also done at the prenatal ultrasound unit and division of obstetrics and gynecology at the Ramban Hospital. So important, something that simple. And yet the pomegranate is common throughout the Middle East, not so much in the United States. I grow pomegranates. I love the pomegranates. Take them and open them up. And by the way, animals love them also. Another study, which is important, is that NAD, and you're going to hear more and more about NAD. NAD is the new superstar of anti-aging. According to Harvard Medical School, it can restore and repair acute kidney injury. Now, an article that is appearing in the current issue of Nature Medicine reported the findings of a team led by a Dr. Pakra, MD, on the benefit of vitamin B3, because that's what NAD is vitamin B3, and specifically helping acute kidney injury. Now, B3 is a precursor to nicotinamide, a dinucleotide, and it's a form of vitamin B3 produced in the body, which is found in every human cell, and up to 10% of hospital deaths, believe it or not, in the United States are acute kidney injury, which leads to a buildup of blood waste products and, in some cases, death. So if you know anyone who wants to have healthier kidneys or anyone who has kidney injury, make sure they know that a Harvard study showed that NAD, generally 100 to 300 milligrams, can make a difference. Now, that's separate from another study that vitamin B3, or NAD, involved 41 cardiac surgery patients and helped them as well. So for the heart, for the kidneys, and for anti-aging, NAD is important. Also, Wi-Fi, WIFI, and cell phone radiation increase the risk of miscarriages by almost 50%. That's according to Kaiser Permanente, just out today. Now, why? I've shared many times with you that cell phones and laptops and tablets are becoming all too common, even for babies and infants, toddlers. In fact, many people would venture to say that they can't live without these devices, and yet disturbing new scientific evidence suggests that magnetic field radiation from Wi-Fi and cell phones could potentially jeopardize one of the most personal and precious connections of all, pregnancy and gestation. A new study funded by the National Institutes of Environmental Health Science found that magnetic field, that's the MF, non-ionizing radiation, also known as electromagnetic field exposure, or EMFs, is associated with a dramatic increase in miscarriage rate. And the radiation is emitted not only from Wi-Fi networks and cell phones, but from power lines and from all these smart meters. So please understand that you need to know that cell phones, Wi-Fi towers are dangerous to your health. Now, are people going to give them up? No. A study that found that miscarriage rates of women exposed to the highest levels of these Wi-Fis was 24% higher than those exposed at the lowest level. So if you're going to have a cell phone, and most people will, get the blue cord, blue tube is called, so that you can plug it in, keep the cell phone about 3 feet away from the body. And also, finally, we have the umboshi, U-M-E-B-O-S-H-I. And how giny, it's actually a Japanese pickled plum. But it has remarkable healing qualities, according to Natural Health 365, a good source. So the umboshi plum could be just what a lot of people need. It brings you, it can help if you've drunk alcohol, if you have sugar crashes, if you have blood acidity, if you have digestive disorders, and even food poisoning. In truth, the umboshi plum has been characterized as a natural immune system booster, and it's been used in Japan for centuries. And it translated into English is the Japanese salt plum. It's actually related to the apricot, and it's pickled in barrels outside with the shiso leaves and sea salt. And the result of all this is it's a very alkalizing food. So if you're acidic, if you've been eating meat, drinking alcohol, this could help alkalize. And this is really good for people who are detoxifying. I always suggest when people are detoxifying, especially from simple sugars, from alcohol, caffeine, refined flour, factory farm animals, all these toxins people are exposed to, fluoride and mercury, that they have the Umboshi plum put into, just put it into a smoothie in the morning and drink it. And it makes a big difference. So it can help. It actually even has a germicidal effect and it's antibacterial, which is good. So it's a great detoxifier. For all of you who are listening and watching, you can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook or download it later. Let me add one last little study here. And this is a study that found a link between the nuts, walnuts, almonds, pistachios that you eat, and this was done at Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School, the lower your inflammatory biomarkers. Now, this was a cross-sectional analysis published today in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So the researchers looked at about those who eat nuts regularly, 5,300 men and women, and does this really make a difference? And they found that if you eat nuts five or more times a week, and even just a small handful, you have a much lower level of what is called C-reactive protein and interleukin-6. Both of these compounds increase in the body when there is inflammation, and that can lead to disease. So when you have an increase in these two, like C-reactive protein or homocysteine, you increase your risk of having a heart attack and stroke. So if you've been eating red meat or processed meat or eggs, you're going to have C-reactive proteins that are going to be elevated. So nuts are the great bromide for preventing heart disease and type 2 diabetes. They get your blood sugar to be stable longer, so you don't have those mood swings up and down. They're rich in fiber and magnesium and antioxidants and the unsaturated fatty acids. All of that protects you against inflammation. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, an open letter to Michael Moore. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is a letter to Michael Moore. This is the second letter. It was 2 years ago that I sent a letter to Michael where I asked him to reconsider his unbridled and over-the-top support for Hillary Clinton. It became so extreme that out in a town in Ohio, I'm not sure which one, he held a open forum praising Hillary. I had big posters of her behind him. And that's fine. You can praise and support anyone you want. That's part of our freedoms. But what was lacking in that, in the subsequent documentary, was any sense of holding her and the corporate Democrats that she supports to a higher standard when it comes to dealing with women, dealing with children, dealing with human suffering, dealing with those on welfare, dealing with those that were incarcerated, dealing with those people by over a million and counting who were impacted by Gulf War syndrome under her president or her husband in the first Iraq war and under Bush. And then later, in her sanctions, 500,000 children died, this destruction of Libya and all the suffering that that issued forth, and even the fact that there's now the largest open-air auction on a daily basis in the world is in Libya. And not a word about any of that. So when you lose your sense of objectivity, when you become so enamored by someone that you don't see them for who they really are, there's a problem. So I just simply asked him to reconsider, and I pointed these things out. I was voting for Jill Stein, before that Rocky Anderson, before that on several occasions Ralph Nader. And I just suggested that maybe he should look at their policies because they were all progressive, and if those didn't make more sense. Never heard back, and he's busy, so maybe he didn't have time to deal with it. But this is the newest one, and I'll post this today. And it deals with reappraising the concerns of the liberal Democrats siding with Hillary in order to beat Trump. Now, my good friend and a notable liberal progressive, highly respected within the liberal progressive community, is Steve Brown. And Steve sent me an email last night, and he argues in retrospect that a Hillary victory would not have led to the appointment of hundreds of deranged federal judges and would have overturned many of the critical environmental protections and OSHA regulations that Trump has done. And it would have normalized, Trump won, which he did, and she didn't, but it would have normalized racism and violence, nor would, had she been elected, would she have given $1 trillion to the top 1% in this tax break. Okay, that's his opinion. He may be right about that. And Michael may be right about that, and I'm pretty sure Mike would hold similar views. However, on foreign policy, here's what Steve and Michael both left out. That a Clinton White House would have likely been a very different matter and even further polarized the major global powers, mainly Russia and China. And it is not unrealistic to suggest that Syria today, had Hillary been elected and all the neocons she surrounded herself with, and her unbridled support of the Council on Foreign Relations and their agenda, would have joined the world's basket cases with Libya following Obama-Clinton regime change under utterly false premises. As we know, every single thing that Clinton and Obama and the neocons said about Gaddafi and Libya was wrong. Now, we, in fact, had been bringing in people to talk about Libya who lived in Libya, who were investigative journalists telling none of this stuff was true. However, we're not a primary source of information for anyone in the corporate liberal or corporate conservative community. For the progressive community, yes, we are. But those are not the ones who are the policymakers or opinion leaders. So Clinton's regime change would not have stopped there. Today, the likelihood Venezuela would have been a completely failed state. All that created by her and the United States neocons. We would still be stockpiling many nuclear weapons that she supported, and international relations with Russia would be far more strained and tense. In fact, the military-industrial complex would have remained where it is today. So Trump would not have done more for it than she would have. And also, imagine her posturing. Could you imagine her posturing to the secret treaties deals that she was making with 44 different countries that we only found about from WikiLeaks. So Steve and Michael, as much as you appreciate Hillary and her policies and voted for her or would have supported her completely, have you gone to Libya? Why doesn't everybody in the corporate left go to Libya and spend a week? And then, before you go, Richard Gale, who's in the studio, and I, we will give you a mini-documentary about Libya up until that time, showing you that Libya had the most freedoms for women of any country, Arab country in the world, had the highest standard of living, the longest lifespan, more savings than anywhere else, a higher percentage of highly literate people than any other country, more than the United States and Great Britain. Over 84%, because it was free education. You could go to any college in the world if you didn't want the college and university studies in Libya. They had free medical care. They had universal health care. and also everyone was granted as a right of life a home to live in. You couldn't be thrown out of an apartment or home. Now imagine all of the real estate brokers that supported the Clintons and Obamas. Now imagine how many people can't afford to live in California or in New York City or in Miami and other places because the real estate market is so high. Imagine how many of those millennials who were asked by Bernie Sanders to give Clinton the support, how many of them are in debt peonage today? Debtors' prisons. There was no debtors' prisons in Libya. There was no debtors at all because everybody had a job or everybody had a home, everybody had food. And also, talk about democracy. We've shredded our constitution a long time ago. Libya had more constitutional groups, over 10,000, than any other country in the world. Local people decided how to live locally. It wasn't given on high. And oh, did they forget to tell you that Gaddafi had already stepped down from absolute running the government 4 years before all this happened. So everything you were taught and told and propagandized was a lie, no different than weapons of mass destruction. Oh, and did we hold any of these people responsible? Did any of them lose their job for being wrong? Were any journalists banned for life from being able to write? Were any of their articles purged because they got that wrong? Now, I think getting it wrong when a whole nation, Iraq, then Afghanistan, and then Syria, and then Libya, and then Venezuela, are all destroyed because of a group of people's politics, and they all share the same ideology. So you may have been right about some environmental issues and judges, but not when it comes to what the world has become because of what they did, and no one's apologized for that. That's unfortunate. And in addition, your commitment to challenging Republican injustice and hypocrisy has motivated you to pull back many of our federal and social ills in your films, notably Sicko, Capitalism, A Love Story, Bowling for Columbine, and Fahrenheit 9/11. And certainly this is the case with your recent film on Trump. However, there was also a time when you, Michael Moore, believed Al Gore and subsequently John Kerry would have been better than Ralph Nader. I remember when you once supported Ralph Nader and the progressive principles he dedicated his life to. And am I missing something here? But didn't someone from Ralph Nader's office come to California? I've spoken with him, so I know it's right. And ask you to come and work in Ralph Nader's office when you'd been fired from Mother Jones, rightly or wrongly. Oh, and by the way, Steve Brown was the person that actually negotiated, tried to intervene to see how that separation should be done. But so Ralph, as far as I'm concerned, gave you your break, even when you went up to make your film, Roger and Me. That person that brought you there was there. He was your cinematographer, too. So you gave a rousing speech in Madison Square Garden in support of Ralph Nader. Good for you. I watched that speech. It was good. Of course, Nader has been responsible for the passage of more legislation beneficial to American consumers than any other non-elected legislator in American history. Nevertheless, for most Democrats and Republicans alike in power, they've made every effort and often succeeded in repealing, diluting, and rejecting and replacing Nader's courageous accomplishments long before Trump. And I'm certain you would agree on the important role Nader has played in representing the public's need in the face of private corporate interest and the government's alliance with the capitalist elite. And upon examining Nader's positions on a large variety of domestic and foreign issues, it's clear he is diametrically opposed to Obama and Clinton. The latter have summarily maintained and preserved the neoliberal oligarchical mandate. Want to know more? Have you actually read the National Defense Authorization Act? Have you spoken with Chris Hedges about what it would mean and what it was that when Chris went in to fight them in court and had himself arrested in front of the White House on a cold, bitter day protesting Obama's National Defense Authorization Act and the Patriot Act and asset forfeiture and all the other things that violated not just common sense, but the dignity of being an American citizen. Right or left is irrelevant. And when was the last time you can actually name a Democrat in power that actually went into the ghettos of America to support the schools, to support bringing back health care to those communities, to support dealing with the ghettoization of America, who rejected the militarization of the police? And by the way, the latest study shows that even when you militarize the police, it does not reduce crime. And when was the last time you saw a president, one that you would have voted for, simply say, if you're in prison for the use of drugs and you've not committed a violent crime, you're all pardoned? He could have done that. Did he? Did Clinton? No, Clinton put him in prison. Hillary put him in prison. The person you supported put them in prison. And yet the temerity of going before a black and Latino audience and claiming this person's for you. Where is the cognitive disconnect on that? If there's one person in America who had the power to help minorities in all senses and rejected that and did just the opposite, rejected the unions with NAFTA, rejected the unions with the Trans-Pacific Partnership that WikiLeaks showed she was strong-arming people and saying behind the scenes she fully supports the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which means supporting the Business Roundtable, which supports the oligarchs and all the major corporate capitalists, vulture capitalists that we have. So I'm kind of confused. Maybe you can help me out here. Capitalism, a love story, okay. And the very people that she supports are all the people in the film. So why am I not understanding that? Yet Ralph Nader, had he been elected, or even Jill Stein, or even Rocky Anderson, true progressives who believed in progressive principles, there would be no need for you to have ever made the film Sicko. Why? Because we would have had Medicare for all. And no, you wouldn't have had to make capitalism a love story, because we would not have had this increasing income and racial and social inequalities, because Ralph Nader and these people wouldn't have tolerated that. And we would likely not have invaded Afghanistan. We would not be holding 900 military bases around the world. We clearly would have stayed out of Iraq. Gaddafi would still have the most progressive, advanced country in Africa. We wouldn't be having people die because they can't afford to live in a home. We wouldn't have the homeless plague that we have today. We wouldn't have had all these genetically engineered foods and the Black Act that Obama passed about protecting Monsanto. And we wouldn't have had Honduras and Ukraine with regime change, because these people wouldn't have attempted to topple the leaders in Venezuela or Syria or anywhere else. For certain, Eisenhower's warnings would have been acknowledged, and the military-industrial complex would not be controlling our foreign policy. There'd be no longer a war between the failing public school system and exaggerated promises of educational privatization and charter schools that Clinton and Obama sponsored. And we would not have civil asset forfeiture of over $4 billion, and we would not have had return of debtors' prisons. They supported Clinton and Obama. So it's not that I'm concerned that we don't have good liberals. We do, but we also have some good conservatives. I wouldn't say that for Republicans, however. That far I won't go. But it's time that the corporate liberal Democrat understand the game is up and why we need to move beyond the division of power between two ruling elites, twiddly-dee and twiddly-do. It doesn't matter any longer whether you're Democrat or Republican. You're both working for the corporatists. You're both working for the vulture capitalist. You're both working for the military-industrial complex. In fact, there's nothing more than a theatrical spectacle of corporatized duopoly. We need more parties and a myopic focus upon Trump at the exclusion of everything else is ignoring the critical progressive issues now in dire need of attention. The consequence is that nothing urgent and positive is being pursued. Michael, I realize your documentaries and books and public appearances are intended to inform and educate as well as entertain the public in your own inimitable way. It is critical that people, irrespective of party allegiance, gain exposure to the truth about those who abuse power. And in and of itself, this is a noble pursuit, and I've always considered you a loyal liberal. However, now we must also face other realities, not simply the reality of the Trump dystopia, as heinous as it is. I believe it's important for you to clearly state publicly the actual policies and social platforms that you will stand for and abide by and support. Now, this has nothing to do with the ambiguous sloganeering and posturing and rah-rah to a captive audience of the choir that already supports you. These are just meaningless euphemisms. We have taken Nader's record in detail. And we have looked at his past stated agendas and compared them with the positions of Obama and Clinton and Bernie Sanders on both domestic and foreign issues. Michael, the message is clear. Ralph Nader, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, other independents represent authentic fundamental change. It is the deep structure of the system that is cancerous and metastasizing rapidly. And to continue promoting the agenda, the corporate liberal Democrat, is simply decorations on the surface that will have no essential positive impact upon anyone's life aside from the multinational elite. For those of us who voted for Nader and Stein, we knew we were going to vote for the future. There was no chance of them winning at that time. But if you think that a third party couldn't win, you're mistaken. Because remember, there was a time when this little guy from Texas ran in Texas Instrument, Ross Perot, got 20% of the vote. But remember what happened after that? I think it was the League of Women Voters said only the Democrat and Republican people could be in the debate. Could you imagine with the intelligence, with the depth of knowledge, with the worldliness, with the wise man and wise woman attitude, had Jill Stein and Ralph Nader been allowed to debate? They would have mopped the floor with Hillary Clinton and everyone else, Republican and Democrat. The total sum of everyone that's run for president from these organizations has been an embarrassment, a stain on the spiritual face of that which truly represents the American people. They don't. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I missed when Bill and Hillary and Barack and Michelle and all the other people that run our lives went into the ghettos, went into the middle class, went out to the farmers and said, friend, I want to see what it's like. I want to be here for a week with you. I'm going to eat the food you eat. I'm going to hang out with you. I'm going to watch the television. I'm going to go out and socialize with you. I want to know what it's like. Name me once that's happened outside of kissing babies and eating hot dogs and acting like because you bring chili sauce, the blacks should vote for you. You've pandered. You've condescended. You've done everything that is despicable. I'm talking about the Clintons. To get someone to believe you when there's a pathology so deep and so pervasive that people don't know the truth. Wasn't it Jack Nicholson and a few good men who said, you can't handle the truth? Well, Americans can handle the truth. They're just never given the opportunity to hear it. If you had supported Ralph Nader vocally, you might have helped boost a third party into playing field so that we wouldn't still be peering into this bleak landscape of the lesser of two evils. So the time has come, in fact it's long overdue, to commence in earnest building a viable, dynamic, and progressive movement. At this time, we must look towards the future. We believe it's time for the nation's 104 million independents who've already walked away from the liberal and corporate and the Republican-conservative parties. They've walked away. We begin to unite now, we can make a difference using progressive themes. And these are the people who are conscious of their moral backbone, whose conscience will no longer permit them to compromise their principles to sustain the status quo. These are the people who want a candidate to vote for, not someone to vote against. Now, I've included a chart today that identifies the true progressives from the corporate wonks who defend the people and who defend the oligarchy. Who defends Wall Street? Who defends Main Street? Who bailed out Wall Street? Who bailed out Main Street? My God, when are people going to be honest? If you can't be honest, then the people should recognize it. If you defend Wall Street, if you defend Big Pharma, if you defend the people who are Big Agra, if you defend Big Energy, if you defend Big Government, if you defend the people that have done nothing but abuse us and at every level, then we should walk faster away from these messengers. Ralph Nader was instrumental in passing an impressive amount of legislation, including the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts, the Whistleblower Protection Act, the Mine Health and Safety Act, the Consumer Product Safety Act, the Federal Coal Mine Health and Safety Act, the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the Co-op Bank Bill, the National Automobile and Highway Traffic Safety Act, the Natural Gas Pipeline Safety Act, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, OSHA, the Safe Water Drinking Act, and the Wholesome Meat Act, and at least 200 more. He also largely was responsible for establishing the Environmental Protection Agency and sponsoring bills that would have protected public lands and the environment that is so necessary with climate change as our number one national security threat. He also wrote laws concerning pension protection, funeral home cost disclosure, consumer credit disclosure, medical device safety, mobile home safety, and nuclear power safety. Ralph Nader also founded and helped start dozens of citizen action groups, including Public Citizen, the American Antitrust Institute, Citizens Advocacy Center, the National Insurance Consumer Organization, the Freedom of Information Clearinghouse, Equal Justice Foundation, the Disability Rights Center, Center for Justice and Democracy, Global Trade Watch, the Center for Science and the Public Interest, the Center for Study of Responsible Law, the Center for Women's Policy Studies, the Health Research Group, Clean Water Action Project, Congress Watch, Tax Reform Research Group, Corporate Accountability Research Group, and dozens of others. Any aspiring activist would find Ralph Nader's accomplishments not just inspiring, but almost unbelievable. Remember, he, as a non-legislator, cause more legislation to protect the environment, to protect animals, protect human beings, than any other legislator in history. Never one to settle for compromise on behalf of a lesser of two evils, he has remained a reliable progressive figure, even as his peers have forsaken their ideals in pursuit of political expediency in their own damn careers. Such strength of character is rare, if not almost non-existent today, and therefore I applaud Ralph Nader. Instead, corporate Democrats shamed voters who selected Nader instead of the two neoliberal candidates. Shame on the Nation magazine. Shame on the entire Democrat liberal establishment, with few exceptions, who said it was Ralph Nader who caused them to lose the election. No, it was not. Similarly, they shamed those who voted for Jill Stein in 2016. There's no excuse for participating in this public shaming. Our democracy will remain a race to the bottom unless well-known liberals like yourself begin to lend support to third-party candidates that are actually in line with progressive ideals and liberal ideals. Many of those voting today have never cast a ballot for a candidate who wasn't a lesser of two evils. Now, this sad fact, more than anything else, represents a fatal flaw of our system. Therefore, Michael, my question is this. Which is more important to you, criticizing Trump or working constructively beyond the oligarchical duopoly to establish a government that Americans can be proud of? Michael, one last thought. It is my belief that had you used your respected celebrity and supported Nader and his progressive platform, which would have been the basis for future progressive candidates to build upon, it is very conceivable that today we would have a viable third party beholden to citizens rather than elite class. Rather, you, along with Bill Maher, shamed Nader by getting on your knees before a national audience to beg him to withdraw for his candidacy. That may have made you look good to the liberal class. It made for a good theater, but closed doors for progressives to enter. Imagine our nation and world today if Nader had continued to be a respected voice for government sanity and true democratic reform to this day. Instead, he's been shunned and dismissed as an old archaic relic who assisted the Republican victory over Democrats. And even then, this has been shown to be grossly inaccurate. He was not responsible for causing the Democrats to lose. Just like it was the Democrats, in no small measure, and what they failed to do in honoring their pledge to the forgotten classes, the working class, and the poor classes, and the teachers, and all the others, that's one of the reasons that people voted for Trump out of anger and rage. So it's time for reflection. And that's my letter, open letter, posted on our website to Michael Moore. Joining me in studio is our scholar in residence and also our executive producer, Richard Gale. Hi, Richard.
Dr. Gary.
Richard, I want to address now the issue of the firing of Bonnie Faulkner, who was an unpaid producer for 17 years since 2001 on many of the Pacifica stations. And we have done our homework on this, and I want you to tell us a little bit about the people who may not be aware of this, may not have heard her show in Berkeley, though we have a lot of people in Berkeley listening, that why she was fired and why we are protesting her firing. Not protesting what was said, because we both, and I made it clear to her that when you make a mistake, and I believe that Bonnie made a serious mistake in judgment, that she should come on the air and apologize for that. But understand that if you're going to take a Bonnie Faulkner off because she allowed a segment that she wasn't interviewing the guy, it was a talk he'd given, to be put on the air, and he made statements that were factually inaccurate. We've looked at all the historical records on the Holocaust and seen that the 6 million figure is more or less accurate, maybe more, maybe less, but not by much, that in and of itself, someone makes that mistake, you say, I made a mistake, and you correct that mistake. But she wasn't given the opportunity to come on to apologize. She wasn't given the opportunity to have a conversation. She was just summarily dismissed, and then 17 years of her archives were purged. That's really regrettable. So from my perspective, there's something else at work here. There's something deeply flawed in the way that Pacifica, in particular, deals with its talent. And your thoughts, please.
So Bonnie had found a clip of he's a retired Marine officer, Alan Sabrowski, and I think just doing our show together, we get so much different material, people can have really wonderful credentials on the surface. And that could be very seductive, thinking that therefore they have some credible, true stuff to share. And in this case, he was the former director of the Army's War College Strategic Studies. And he held the chair of the General of Army MacArthur Arthur's thing for research. He has very impeccable credentials, but he came out questioning the Holocaust, the figures of the Holocaust, claiming that only about 300,000 Jews were actually exterminated by the Nazis, and he based this upon an International Red Cross report that emerged. It's been known for a while that emerged from the Red Cross archives. So I'd like to kind of speak on, I'll speak on that too, because it's kind of a very interesting part of history too. But that basically Bonnie did not do her homework and really to check any of this. You can dig around, but the whole history of the hoax behind this Red Cross report is there. But when you understand the history behind it, it kind of makes sense. One thing I recognize is the Red Cross was so overburdened during World War II. I mean, imagine millions of people, refugees, displacements, they're needing support. It left itself wide open for a lot of Nazi infiltration. And the Holocaust Museum actually has a document paper showing, came out of Harvard actually, looking at thousands of documents and recognize and observing how the Nazis had been using the Red Cross for money laundering, for foreign currency exchange, for engaging in espionage, just because the Red Cross was so overburdened by what its normal humanitarian responsibilities would be. So the story was that Hitler, as the war was moving forward and what the Nazis were doing in the concentration camps and extermination camps and deporting of Jews to these different ghettos, as that was starting to leak out, Hitler and his crew, they made every effort to do as much cover-up as they could, and they had invited the Red Cross to visit a camp, but it was all sanitized. It was held in Bohemia. It was in Bohemia, what's in the Czech Republic today. And out of this, the Red Cross kind of produced this report to kind of discredit what the other media and reporting that was coming out. And this is the report that this guy, this Alan Sobrowski, has based all his kind of Holocaust denial on. And unfortunately, Bonnie kind of jumped on that and thought there might be something to it, or whatever, for whatever reason, she felt she wanted to share this guy's clip on her program.
So we did the research showing how the Red Cross was complicit. It should have known that it was visiting only a sanitized camp, being fed misinformation, and therefore anyone using that is going to be misinformed. Mm-hmm. And whether they had the intention or not to put out misinformation, they're going to. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that it's so important to do your homework. But here's the way I look at it. Now, I want your response. I believe that Bonnie Faulkner, when you look at the total body of her work, she's taken on some very controversial topics mm-hmm. that no other Pacifica station or programmer is going to take on. And she has been right on those. We listen to the show. We mm-hmm. we know who her guests are. And when you look, for example, at 9/11, now I'm going to play tomorrow a little clip that no one has seen. It's a bunch of firefighters and a fire chief covered in ash, and they're bloodied, and they're talking with this reporter about how the bombs went off, explosions went off, before the building collapsed. And all of them said the same thing. Why it wasn't that in the official report? So we have done multiple shows on 9/11, but we never say what we believe happened. We merely show how the official report is wrong, and there are 3,000 engineers and architects that now believe that. So we'll tell you what didn't happen, but we can't tell you what did happen. We don't know who was behind it. We only know from the 28 pages that were released that Bandar, the Saudi ambassador, was funding these people. But we can't go beyond that. So to say that the government was behind or CIA, there's no proof. Mm-hmm. So you have to stop with the information you have. It's where you get into troubles when you speculate beyond that. Bonnie has invited people, including experts, on to talk on different themes that others would not. That takes a lot of effort and a lot of time. So she makes this mistake. She makes a mistake. Okay. Apologize for it. It's done. You learn a strong lesson. But do you take her off the air? If you're going to take her off the air, Pacifica, for that, then you're going to have to take Amy Goodman off the air. Because allowing someone to misstate history must also be compared to what happens when you have someone beating the drums for regime change in Syria or Libya. Look at the consequences. I haven't seen anyone go and do a special on here's the consequences of what we promoted and promoting and praising the White Helmets. So we were the first radio program in the country to show it was a terrorist organization. All right. And it is a terrorist organization. Our reporters came from the active battlefield. So are we dealing with a double standard here? Because if you were to take everyone off the air who made some mistake, factual mistake, I'm not talking just about on any major mistake, then you wouldn't have anyone left on the air. But all the time you're given an opportunity. If the New York Times make a mistake, which it does, then they can go back and they can correct that. They have a retraction. They have an apology place. You have to allow someone an opportunity to have a dialogue with you. And this is not true in KPFA. And this is unfortunate. Your final thoughts?
our times are so different.
This is highly politicized.
This is highly politicized, but
there's an agenda at work here.
What comes to my mind is, and this is just not true of Pacifica, but I think the nonprofit world today has become so strapped and compromised by the in their values and the old values due to the scramble for funds to keep going. The funding's dried up a lot for any of these kinds of what it was. I mean, you know, it's Pacifica is not going to bring on the anarchists and the anarchistic little groups in Oakland, California, and the Black Bloc or something like that. Those people don't have any, they don't have a dime in their pocket to donate over to Pacifica. You know, even though in the 1960s or they would have.
Pacifica had a great legacy at one point. Today, it has a terrible legacy.
Right, but
there's a good reason why. Yeah. Even at the highest quality broadcast signals in all five markets were the very last station and bled over 90% of our audience. There's a reason why. So I'm asking all the people right now from California, stop supporting KPFA. Don't donate a dime and turn it off. There are other stations you can listen to. Because if we're going to have this kind of rampant censorship, then what will be next? Already I've seen some of these guys suggesting that anyone who criticizes Israel or denies the Holocaust should be put in prison, as other countries have. And so imagine what will happen when you open that door. So it means if you deny 9/11, you could go to prison or you could be censored or you could be fined. Once you open a door to censorship of one person, you're opening the door to anyone else that you want to see censored. And that's where it becomes highly political, and that's already what's in existence today, where they're taking people they don't like. Look at all the people we know that have been censored.
All the lists by Google and Facebook. And the thing is, it's, you know, I mean, do you really think that anybody at Facebook or Google goes and reads TruthDig?
No, or Consortium News.
Or Consortium News.
But tomorrow we're going to go over that list of places that have been censored that shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Here's what it is. Bonnie, in our opinion, made a mistake. Okay, we all make mistakes. She should not have been purged, and certainly not 17 years of her archives purged. This is purely political, and it's time that we called out KPFK and its manager and its inner circle to control everything, that you do not represent Pacifica any longer, and you haven't for a long time. You don't represent its ideals. You don't represent its commitment to open and fair debate. If you want to see someone who is making errors in judgment, bring them on the air and then let them show the audience what they don't know with certainty, what others would question and be more cautious about. Fortunately, Bonnie has a program here on the Progressive Radio Network, and unlike Pacifica, we don't censor people and throw their ass out because someone's got an agenda going on. And that's the way it is. So thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
All right, cool.